Welcome back to another episode of What's Going On in the World. My name is Tommy J. Houseman, and I am your host. Today is March 2nd, 2025. It is Sunday, and there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot going on in the world, but of course, there's been just a few things dictating the news, so we're going to have to focus in and narrow it down. I've been struggling to generate a consistent format with this podcast, especially with everything that's going on in the world. And I have a very busy schedule, so it really is dependent on when I can get in here to record. So I'm going to do my best to try to help you guys that are out there listening navigate through what's going on. So as we all know, Trump ran a circus in the White House the other day. And there's so much to unpack here that I think the best way to do it is just to listen to what he said and then let me stop every once in a while and talk about what it is that's going on. So there's about 11 minutes of him talking. We might not listen to the whole thing, because it's hard to listen to, but it's really important that we get that other side of the story out there. So we're gonna grin our teeth and bear it. So let's just get started and let's just jump right in.
And now I'm talking with my friends in Poland, and they are worried that you align yourself too much with. What's your message for them?
Well, if I didn't align myself with both of them, you'd never have a deal. You want me to say really terrible things about Putin and then say, "Hi, Vladimir, how are we doing on the deal?" That doesn't work that way. I'm not aligned with Putin. I'm not aligned with anybody. I'm aligned with the United States of America and for the good of the world. I'm aligned with the world. And I want to get this thing over with. You see the hatred he's got for Putin. It's very tough.
So right there, Zelensky's face and his eyes just widened. You see the hate that he has for Putin. I mean, that's right off the bat. He's acting like a fool. He's embarrassing himself and he's embarrassing our country. So if someone... I'm going to try to keep this simple. I want to break this down so you can understand it. For those of you that are listening and tuning in and are going to hear me and not agree with me, I'm going to just get it out of the way. Trump is an evil person. He shouldn't be in the White House. He should be in jail. So I'm going to try to break it down for you so you understand why this should never have happened. If somebody breaks into your house and starts taking over and occupying part of it, you're not going to be too fond of them, are you? I've heard all kinds of arguments out there on social media, and I've gotten into some debates that I'd rather not have gotten into. And there's a lot of just straight Russian propaganda that's coming out of U.S. citizens' mouths. And I want to just circle around to that real quick. If there is something wrong with the Ukrainian government, let's say there's something wrong with it, and it needs to be fixed, it needs to be looked at, it needs to be examined. That is not a reason to invade a country and kill people. That's not that complicated of a concept. It's really a ridiculous thing that I even have to say. It's wrong to invade a country and kill people. But I have to say that over and over again because of the pigeons, which I'll explain that later.
To make a deal with that kind of hate, he's got tremendous hatred. And I understand that, but I can tell you the other side isn't exactly in love with, him either. It's not a question of alignment. I'm aligned with the world. I want to get the thing set. I'm aligned with Europe. I want to see if we can get this thing done. You want me to be tough? I could be tougher than any human being you've ever seen. I'd be so tough. But you're never going to get a deal that way. So that's the way it goes. All right, one more question.
I want to respond to this. So look, for 4 years in the United States of America, we had a president who stood up at press conferences and talked tough about Vladimir Putin. And then Putin invaded Ukraine and destroyed a significant chunk of the country. The path to peace and the path to prosperity is maybe engaging in diplomacy. We tried the pathway of Joe Biden of thumping our chest and pretending that the president of the United States' words mattered more than the president of the United States' actions. What makes America a—
So I have to stop right there because there were all kinds of actions. We were supporting Ukraine by supplying them with, you know, weapons so they can defend themselves. So there was all kinds of action, and it wasn't just taken by the president. It was taken by Congress, because you can't do things like that without the approval of Congress. And so I have to mention, for those of you out there that don't understand how bills are passed or how money is spent, Congress, you know, they're the fiduciary. That's who decides where the money goes. Okay. So, there's a couple small things a president can do through executive order, but sending that much help or aid to Ukraine is not one of them. As we were sending aid to them while last time Trump was president, he actually tried to stop that, which is unconstitutional and illegal. Which is one of the reasons he got impeached. So, because you can't, you know, barter information for congressional aid that's already been decided. You can't interfere with that. Which, you know, this term he's been doing a lot of that, which is why he should be in jail. So, J.D. Vance is a moron, and he is just an ass kisser. He's just a sycophant. He just wants a little bit of limelight here. He wants his 15 minutes of fame. He's acting like a tough guy, and, you know, look at him. That's not a tough guy. That's a weasel.
Country is America engaging in diplomacy. That's what President Trump is doing.
Can I ask you?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So he occupied our parts, big parts of Ukraine, parts of East and Crimea. So he occupied it on 2014. So during a lot of years, so I'm not speaking about just Biden, but those time was Obama, then President Obama, then President Trump, then President Biden, now President Trump, and God bless, now President Trump will stop him. But during 2014, nobody stopped him. He just occupied and took. He killed people. You know what the contact
2015.
2014
and 2014.
2014.
Yeah. So
he's
not here.
Yeah, but
that's exactly right.
There we are again. So Trump stops him from talking about, you know, the timeline and makes it about him. It's not important. It has everything to do with him. It has to do with what's going on in Ukraine. But Trump said, wait a minute. Let's talk about me for a second. I wasn't here, so obviously I'm not responsible for that. Like he didn't have anything to do with the empowering of Putin when he was in office before, giving Putin the stage and the platform that he wanted to, in order to spread whatever information that he was wanting to spread. So he gave him a platform to do that. And he emboldened him to do what he wanted to do. And this is not the first time they've done it. They've done it before. And there is a treaty in place that they're not supposed to do. This is a sovereign nation. They are not. There's an agreement in place. They should not be invaded. And they were invaded by Russia. And this is the second time. And then, you know, Trump wants to interrupt and say, hey, look at me. I wasn't here then. So he's there now, and Putin is still at war with Ukraine and still trying to take Ukraine, and he's done nothing about it. So.
Yes, but during 2014 till 2022, the situation the same? The people have been dying on the contact line.
nobody stopped him. You know that we had conversations with him, a lot of conversations, my bilateral conversation, and we signed with him, me, like a new president. In 2019, I signed with him the deal. I signed with him, Macron and Merkel, we signed ceasefire. Ceasefire. All of them told me that he will never go. We signed him with gas contract. Gas contract. Yes, but after that, he broken this ceasefire. He killed our people and he didn't exchange prisoners. We signed the exchange of prisoners, but he didn't do it. What kind of diplomacy, JD, you are speaking about? What do you mean?
I'm talking about the kind of diplomacy that's going to end the destruction of your country.
Yes, but if you...
Mr. President, with respect, I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media. Right now, you guys are going around and...
And before it gets into the whole blow up here, as he pointed to the camera and said, I don't want you to... it's not fair for you to litigate this in front of the American people. This shouldn't be happening. We should not be witnessing this. We should not be seeing this. This is unprecedented for us to watch them talk to each other like this. Usually when something like this happens, you say hi, they say a couple words, and then they go off and then they talk, and then maybe afterwards they say a couple more words, but it's all very planned, very scripted, and it's a minimal thing, and maybe they'll answer some questions. But this is a performance. This is a circus. They are in. The cameras are there. They've been allowed to keep rolling, and they have started a conversation that should not have been started in front of cameras. And now J.D. Vance is going to open his mouth and say some of the dumbest things that you've ever heard.
And conscripts to the front lines because you have manpower problems. You should be thanking the president for trying to bring an end to this conflict.
Have you ever been to Ukraine that you say what problems we have?
I have been to
come one.
I've actually watched and seen the stories, and I know what happens is you bring them on a propaganda tour, Mr. President. Do you disagree that you've had problems bringing people into your military? And do you think that it's respectful to come to the Oval Office of the United States of America and attack the administration that is trying to prevent the destruction of your country?
So he just accused him of attacking him, and he wasn't attacking him. The entire time Zelensky was speaking, after JD said something about diplomacy, is all he was saying is that we've been having diplomacy, and in 2014 we had diplomacy, and he attacked anyway. There was already an agreement in place, and then he attacked, and now he's attacking again. Diplomacy has not stopping Putin from trying to invade Ukraine. Diplomacy is not stopping him from killing people. And J.D. Vance, this little putz from the mountains, thinks that he can come in here and talk to this man who's been on the front line of protecting his country, a country at war. And he thinks that he is in a place to talk to him like that. It's insane. This is the invaded president. All that they should be doing is talking about how that they want to help him from the invader. Zelensky did nothing wrong at all but talk about how Putin behaves. And they didn't like that. And I think that this is all purposeful here to get him to say something that they don't like that they can jump on and pounce on. And that's getting ready to happen.
A lot of questions. Let's start from the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, during the war, everybody has problems. Even you, but you have nice ocean and don't feel now, but you will feel it in the future.
You don't know that.
God bless. You will not have to work.
Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because you're in no position to dictate that.
That's
remember
exactly
this. You're in no position to dictate what we're going to feel. We're going to feel very good.
Feel influence.
We're going to feel very good and very strong.
You will feel influence.
You're right now not in a very good position. You've allowed yourself to be in a very bad position, and it happens to be right about it.
From the very beginning of the war.
You're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having cards.
Not playing cards.
Right now, you don't.
So I want to stop right there for a second. I'm not playing cards. You're not in a good position here. the guy that dodged the draft because he said he had bone spurs is telling a president who's at war that he's not in a good position. You don't think that he knows he's not in a good position? He has Putin trying to steal his country, and his people are being murdered. And for the president of the United States to even act like that for a moment in front of television cameras to a president that's been invaded is the most despicable, disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. It's an embarrassment. And all he was doing was answering a question. He was just answering J.D. Vance's question and explaining how the influence of a continued growth of Russia would be felt globally. And that's not conjecture, and it's not dictation. It's a fact. If Russia continues to behave how it is behaving right now, and it continues to try to take and take and take, it will be disruption. It'll be a disruption to the entire global economy and everything connected to everything and anything. And that is all that Zelensky was saying. And then Trump starts acting like a 6-year-old because that's what he is.
You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country. That's backed you far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Have you said thank you once this entire meeting? No, in this entire meeting, have you said thank you?
In the entire meeting, the meeting has been 5 minutes and 34 seconds so far. Has he said thank you? Well, he went on a thank you tour. There, if you want to go type in, you know, to your little Google machine, Zelensky saying thank you. And it's just an infinite amount of thank yous. And whenever he was talking and J.D. Vance interrupted him about, you know, the Trump administration, and he kept saying, God bless, God bless, God bless. He was trying to be appreciative then. And now he was showing appreciation just a few minutes ago before J.D. Vance took his whole foot and shoved it in his mouth like the bitch he is. So it's obvious that they're looking for a fight. These are not adults in the room. They're trying to push an argument here and trying to embarrass Zelensky, but all they ended up doing was embarrassing themselves and our entire country.
You went to Pennsylvania and campaigned for the opposition in October. Offer some words of appreciation for the United States of America and the president who's trying to save your country.
Please, you think that if you will speak very loudly about the war,
He's not speaking loudly.
Yes, he was speaking loudly. And the look on Zelensky's face right now is just that of shock that Trump has looked at him and talked to him like that and told him that he's not speaking loudly. That's gaslighting. This is typical Republican MAGA behavior.
Speaking loudly. Your country is in big trouble. Wait a minute. No. You've done a lot of talking. Your country is in big trouble.
I know.
You're not winning. You're not winning this. You have a damn good chance of coming out okay because of us.
Mr. President, we are staying in our country, staying strong from the very beginning of the war. We've been alone, and we are thankful. I said thanks
You haven't been alone.
Yes, they have been alone. They don't have any other troops. It's just them. There's been some Freedom Fighter volunteers that have come in. So they have held off Russia's army. They've depleted Russia's army. Unfortunately, I don't have all the numbers here in front of me right now to tell you exactly the numbers, but Russia is in retreat. One of the reasons they want to have some sort of stop, ceasefire to this is so Putin can regroup. He wants to be able to regroup and he'll attack again. That's exactly what's going to happen. And that's what he was talking about to begin with. This needs to be, you know, something solid so they have some assurance that it's not, their word isn't broken, because what Putin needs right now is time to regroup so he can attack again, because Zelensky's army has destroyed everything that's come at them.
We gave you, through the stupid president, $350 billion.
You voted for your
military equipment.
And it wasn't $350 billion. That's a huge overestimation. So, I mean, just the amount of lies that comes out of this idiot's mouth is just pathetic. I mean, if you want to make a point about anything, I mean, that's not the way to do it. And we don't give them money. We give them equipment. We give them stuff. We give them munitions. We give them tanks. We give them things to protect themselves with. And then guess what we do? We replace those things here at home, which gives jobs to U.S. citizens. So U.S. citizens go to work. It bolsters our economy. It doesn't really do anything but make profit for us to help other people. So it helps us on so many fronts. It doesn't make any sense to even complain about it. For one, we're stopping the spread of the Soviet Union, which is communism. So we're stopping the spread of communism, and we're helping somebody that's been attacked, and we're bolstering our own economy by putting U.S. citizens to work. And this orange moron wants to yell at the person that got invaded.
They're brave, but they had to use our military.
What about West?
If you didn't have our military equipment,
you invited me to
have our military equipment, this war would have been over in 2 weeks.
In three days, I heard it from Putin. In 3 days, this is something
maybe less.
In 2 weeks, of course, yes.
It's going to be a very hard thing to do business like this. I tell you,
thank you.
I said a lot of times. Except that American people.
Except that there are disagreements. And let's go litigate those disagreements rather than trying to fight it out in the American media when you're wrong.
There it is again. Instead of trying to fight it out in American media, which they staged. They staged that. The camera should not be there, and they are. I cannot adequately convey how big of a putz this person is. He might be the biggest putz that has ever, ever set foot into the White House, maybe in the world. I have never seen such despicable, disgusting, embarrassing behavior. What in the hell?
We know that you're wrong.
But you see, I think it's good for the American people to see what's going on. I think it's very important. That's why I kept this going so long. You have to be thankful. You don't have the cards.
Thankful.
You're buried there. You're people are dying. You're running low on soldiers. You're running low on soldiers. It would be a damn good thing. And then you tell us, I don't want a ceasefire. I don't want a ceasefire. I want to go, and I want this. Look, if you could get a ceasefire right now, I tell you, you take it so the bullets stop flying and your men stop getting killed.
Of course, we want to stop the war. But
you're saying you don't want a ceasefire.
But I said to you,
I want a ceasefire.
With guarantees.
Because you'll get a ceasefire faster than an agreement.
Ask our people about ceasefire, what they think.
That wasn't with me.
For you,
that wasn't with me.
And here he goes again. He's pointing at himself, and he's got his hands out like that, showing his little bitty orange hands. And he's pointing at himself with his thumb. It wasn't with me. It wasn't with me. He is president right now, and Putin is attacking Zelensky's country. It doesn't matter who's been president, and that's what Zelensky's trying to tell him. Trying to tell him it doesn't matter who's been president. It's your country that has helped us put these deals into place, and Putin ignored them. He ignored those ceasefires. That is all he is telling him, is that Putin has ignored those ceasefires. I want to discuss what we're going to do to make sure he doesn't ignore those ceasefires again. It's a simple question, but it's too much. It's too much for J.D. Vance and Trump to handle, because they're incompetent idiots.
I was with a guy named Biden who was not a smart person.
It was your president.
Excuse me. That was with Obama, who gave you sheets, and I gave you javelins.
Yes.
I gave you the javelins to take out all those tanks. Obama gave you sheets. In fact, the statement is Obama gave sheets and Trump gave javelins. You got to be more thankful.
He's in there trying to make a tagline. You should have seen him. He just acted like he came up with this ingenious idea. That's the headline. That's the headline. Why in the hell is this man president?
Because let me tell you, you don't have the cards. With us, you have the cards. But without us, you don't have any cards.
The vice president. Sorry.
It'll be a tough deal to make. Because the attitudes have to change. What are you saying?
She's asking, what if Russia breaks the ceasefire?
I say, before he answers, that's what all Zelensky's been trying to say the entire time. And here is the President of the United States' response.
What if anything? What if a bomb drops on your head right now? Okay? What if they broke it? I don't know. They broke it with Biden because Biden, they didn't respect him. They didn't respect Obama. They respect me. Let me tell you, Putin went through a hell of a lot with me. He went through a phony witch hunt where they used him and Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. You ever hear of that deal? That was a phony.
Yeah, we did hear of that deal. Russia absolutely, unequivocally interfered with the 2016 election. People went to jail. Miracle. Yeah, Miracle. But that was her name. She went to jail, federal prison, for whistleblowing. The fact, and that's Miracle Reality. Reality Miracle, or one of the other, either way. She went to jail. She went to prison for leaking the documents that proved Russian collusion. I mean, everything that them two are saying in this meeting right now is Russian propaganda. I mean, Putin has his hand up their asses and is moving their mouth. I don't know why. I don't know what they think that they're going to gain from this. I don't really understand what the purpose of allowing a communist country to control the people in our White House. I don't understand the logic behind that, but that is what's happening.
That was a phony Hunter Biden, Joe Biden scam. Hillary Clinton, Shifty Adam Schiff. It was a Democrat scam. And he had to go through that. And he did go through it. We didn't end up in a war. And he went through it. He was accused of all that stuff. He had nothing to do with it. It came out of Hunter Biden's bathroom. It came out of Hunter Biden's bedroom. It was disgusting. And then they said, oh, the laptop from hell was made by Russia.
Do you hear this guy? Do you know how many reports have come out about this laptop that said there's nothing on the laptop? This man is an idiot. This is the man that is in charge of our country, and we've allowed this to happen.
The 51 agents, the whole thing was a scam, and he had to put up with that. He was being accused of all that stuff. All I can say is this. He might have broken deals with Obama and Bush, and he might have broken them with Biden. He did, maybe. Maybe he didn't. I don't know what happened, but he didn't break them with me. He wants to make a deal. I don't know if you can make a deal. The problem is I've empowered you to be a tough guy. And I don't think you'd be a tough guy without the United States. And your people are very brave. But you're either going to make a deal or we're out. And if we're out, you'll fight it out. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but you'll fight.
He's literally there to make a deal. That's why he's there. He's trying to talk to them about making a deal. But they wanted to yell like little sixth grade idiots.
It out, but you don't have the cards. But once we sign that deal, you're in a much better position, but you're not acting at all thankful. And that's not a nice thing. I'll be honest. That's not a nice thing. All right. I think we've seen enough. What do you think? Huh? This is going to be great television. I will say that.
And there it is right there with all the sycophants laughing in the background like hyenas. that idiot just said this is going to make great TV, which was the whole point the entire time, was to make a spectacle.
All right. We'll see what we can do about putting it together. Thanks.
All right. So that's it. Except for, you know, I don't know if this happened before or after, but Marjorie Taylor Greene's boyfriend, which I don't know his name, and I didn't bother to look it up because I really don't think he deserves to have a name. So he asked, don't you own a suit? And he thought it was rude of him to show up in a suit. He's at war. It's not appropriate for him to dress up in a suit. And he goes, if you want me to put a costume on after the war, I will. Maybe something like what you're wearing, maybe something better, maybe something not so good. I don't know. It, the absolute nonsensical idiocy that it took for him to stand there and ask that question to a man whose country is being invaded is absolutely absurd. It's just so absurd. I don't even know how to adequately convey how absurd it is to ask him that, especially since Elon Musk is rolling around like in the Oval Office all the time, you know, with his kid on his shoulders, wearing a hat and t-shirts and acting like an idiot and talking about things that he doesn't understand and stealing our data and taking people's jobs away, U.S. citizens' jobs away. Good job. Costing us money and putting us in more danger and then helping himself to everything that whatever it is that he wants help to. So, you know, upon reentering the White House, President Trump, he moved with remarkable speed to implement sweeping policy shifts, many which appear to originate from his own 2016-2020 playbook, but from the detailed plans provided by outside institutions. In his first days back in office, Trump signed a record number of executive orders, targeting everything from federal workforce rules to social policy. A side-by-side analysis by Politico found dozens of cases where presidents' early executive actions have aligned with portions of the Heritage's 922-page policy document, Project 2025, including some instances with nearly verbatim language lifted from the report. In other words, Trump's directives often read as they were copied and pasted from pre-existing conservative blueprints rather than conceived within the White House. Several of these moves represented radical departures from prior administrations. For example, Trump resurrected an initiative to strip job protections from career civil servants by reclassifying them under a new Schedule F category, making them far easier to fire and replace with political loyalists. You know, people that say, yes, sir. The initiative, originally attempted via executive order in late 2020, had been nullified by President Biden, who rescinded Schedule F before it could take effect. Now Trump has brought it back, fulfilling a top priority of advisors who seek to purge the so-called deep state by ousting long-tenured officials en masse. In another early order, Trump effectively shut down the Labor Department's official Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, a civil rights office established in 1965, by revoking its founding regulation and instructing that it shall immediately cease operations. He also directed his administration to gut the Department of Education budget as a prelude to potentially closing the agency entirely. Each of these drastic actions has been telegraphed by outside policy papers long before Trump's inauguration. Notably, even as Trump publicly distanced himself from Heritage's Project 2025, claiming on social media that he had nothing to do with it, many of the blueprint's contributors now hold influential posts in administration. The infrastructure of Trump's second-term agenda was largely built outside the government, assembled by think tanks and ideologues during his years of power, only to be delivered to him as a ready-made governing manual. The result is a presidency executing an extensive to-do list that Trump did not draft. In effect, Donald Trump has become the vessel of the hard-right policy revolution crafted by others, a de facto puppet presidency, in which the strings are being pulled from think tank boardrooms and even corporate suits rather than the Oval Office. This is a puppet presidency. He is a puppet, only seeking to stay out of jail and gain money and steal money from U.S. citizens. He's being controlled by the Heritage Foundation, and he has put many of them in place. He's being controlled by Elon Musk, and he is being controlled by Putin. Anybody that he thinks that he can get money from or keep him out of jail. The amount of things that this president is doing that are unconstitutional, if there weren't so many sycophants kowtowing to and cuckolding everything that he does, I just... If all that stuff wasn't going on, he'd be impeached. He'd already be impeached, and I think he would already be gone. If we had the Republicans, of the Bush era, I can't see how he would possibly still be in office. So, since this came out, I have found that about 90% of comments and posts, maybe 85, are aligned with thinking that that was a horrible, horrible situation. And then there's some that defend him. And the ones that are defending him are literally spewing out Russian propaganda. And I don't really want to go through all of the things that they're saying, other than to tell you it's ridiculous, and it's easy to say that, to shut it down. But I found that after I adequately got into a debate with somebody online and shut everything down, that there is a very strong resistance. So the person that posted the nonsense that I'm not going to read, I called them the parrot, and then I called myself the owl in a little editorial that I wrote. And I call this other guy that interrupted and wanted to debate with me as well, a pigeon. I called him a pigeon. I called him a pigeon because it's like playing chess with pigeons. Arguing with an idiot is like playing chess with pigeons. They just make a mess and shit all over the board. So I'm going to try to explain to you how you might go about dealing with something like this. And I'm going to read to you, and part of the editorial is like four editorials I wrote. Inside the Mind of a Pigeon, a Case Study in Willful Stupidity. Today I ran a little experiment, a social dissection, if you will, on a pigeon, my name for MAGA cultists who squawk propaganda without thinking. The goal? To see if there was any possible way to break through their mental fortress of right-wing delusion. I tried two different approaches. Aggression and belittling, which got them riled up, but did nothing to make him engage with facts. Providing sourced, verifiable information, which he dismissed as liberal talking points, despite every citation coming from international watchdogs, bipartisan government reports, and investigative journalism. The results? Predictable. No matter what evidence I provided, he refused to engage with reality. Instead, he doubled down on projection, logical fallacies, and pure emotional deflection. This is textbook cognitive dissonance. When faced with information that contradicts deeply held beliefs, the mind either adjusts or builds a bigger wall to protect itself. Pigeons, always choose the wall. This guy accused me of lacking critical thinking while demonstrating zero of it himself. He called me brainwashed while mindlessly parroting right-wing propaganda. He claimed I had Trump derangement syndrome, even though he's the one incapable of criticizing Trump no matter how many crimes he commits. This isn't just stupidity. It's a psychological projection at its finest. This wasn't just one guy. This is an entire voting block of people so deep in their echo chambers that reality no longer exists for them. Studies on political belief reinforcement show that these people don't care about truth. They care about protecting their identity. You've heard that terminology, identity politics, right? Facts threaten that identity, so they reject them outright. The lesson? You can't debate a pigeon. You can provide facts. You can cite sources. You can hit them with everything short of personally introducing them to Victor Shulkin, and they will still deny reality. Why? Because admitting they're wrong would require emotional maturity they simply do not have. Instead, they lash out, they deflect, and protect their fragile worldviews at all costs. This isn't ignorance. This is willful stupidity. And it's why debating them is kind of a waste of time. My final thought on this is that you can educate someone who is ignorant, but you can't fix someone who is willfully stupid. And that is what I found this to be. And so through all this, you know, the original post was a bunch of garbage nonsense that was really easy to break down and disprove. And I did it in 8 points. So in 8 points, I wrote about 3 or 4 paragraphs with sources, you know, saying that everything that they said was wrong. And then that person tried to still argue with me, tell me that I didn't know what I was talking about. So I argued with them in several different ways, because one of the things that I want to do is I do actually believe that we can change people's minds. So that's my takeaway from this is, you know, how do we change their minds, right? So the response that I took from this guy that I think best summarizes all his comments into one. And there are lots, but I think this encapsulates them the best. He said, "Bro, you just can't handle being shown up. But I would think at this point in your life, you would be used to it. But please bring more, because I'll discredit you some more if you need more punishment. Once again, you prove nothing other than you can regurgitate liberal news articles. You literally have zero inside information to prove anything you claimed. Your VP Biden literally on video committing a quid pro quo act like it didn't happen. And maybe you and are happy about interfering in foreign governments. And in that case, it would eliminate your other arguments. No one is interfering in their election." I don't even really understand most of that. It's not really English for the most part. But, you know, everything that he says has been disproven over and over again. Yet, even though it's been disproven, he hangs onto it and he keeps saying it. And I disproved it. I disproved it and pointed out how it was all wrong. But he said that since I wasn't there, there's no possible way that I could know. But that same logic didn't apply to him. So the response in question is a textbook example of psychological defense mechanism in action, designed not to engage in meaningful debate, but to protect the individual's fragile belief system at all costs. And it's instead of addressing factual evidence or presenting a counter argument, the individual relies on emotional reasoning, projection, and deflection to maintain their worldview. One of the most revealing aspects of their response is their insistence that the only way to know something is through firsthand experience, a claim that exposes both cognitive dissonance and a fundamental misunderstanding of how knowledge works. This expectation is explicitly stated in their attempts to dismiss all sources of information. You literally have zero inside information to prove anything you claimed, is the quote. This is a deliberate rejection of all documented, verifiable evidence in favor of a standard that is both unreasonable and unattainable. By insisting that the only valid knowledge comes from firsthand experience, they create a scenario where no evidence, no matter how credible, can ever challenge their beliefs. This is a classic example of cognitive dissonance. Rather than confronting information that contradicts their worldview, they disqualify the very concept of evidence itself. Their argument suggests that unless someone is physically present and personally involved in an event, they cannot know anything about it. This logic is not just flawed, it's fundamentally anti-intellectual. Under this standard, no one could ever know about World War II unless they were alive during it. No one could understand the solar system unless they had physically been to space. No one could study medicine, law, or science unless they personally conducted every single experiment. This level of epistemic nihilism, the rejection of knowledge unless directly experienced, completely contradicts how human civilization has functioned for thousands of years. The reason we have history, science, journalism, and research is that knowledge is built through documentation, verification, and peer review, not personal anecdotes. What's ironic is the individual does not apply this standard to their own beliefs. They claim to know that Biden engaged in quid pro quo, that Trump is unfairly targeted, and that Ukraine is corrupt. But by their own logic, unless they were personally involved in those situations, they shouldn't be able to make those claims either. This is a textbook example of motivated reasoning. They demand impossible levels of proof for things they don't want to believe, but accept zero proof for things they already believe. This expectation that firsthand knowledge is the only valid knowledge is a convenient excuse to dismiss anything that challenges their worldview. It is not skepticism. It is intellectual cowardice disguised as critical thinking. What follows is a breakdown of the psychological tactics at play and how they manifest in this response. And that response I've already read to you. Psychological analysis of a pigeon. The defense mechanisms of a willfully ignorant debater. In an analysis of an individual's response during a political debate, several psychological defense mechanisms and cognitive biases emerged as dominant patterns in their argumentation. Rather than engaging in an evidence-based discussion, the individual displayed behaviors consistent with projection, cognitive dissonance, the Dunning-Kruger effect, gaslighting, the backfire effect, and the sunk cost fallacy. These defense mechanisms reveal a deeply ingrained resistance to factual information and prioritization of emotional validation over intellectual honesty. One of the most apparent mechanisms in the response is projection. The individual accused their opponent of being unable to handle being shown up, which is me. Even though they provided no counterarguments and instead relied on emotional rhetoric, projection is a well-documented psychological defense mechanism where individuals attribute their own insecurities or failures to others as a way of self-preservation. In this case, the person struggling to provide factual rebuttals instead accuses their opponent of failing to engage in critical thinking, when in reality, they're the one failing to do so. The Dunning-Kruger effect is also heavily present. The individual exudes false confidence, claiming they have discredited the opposing argument when, in fact, they have failed to engage with any factual evidence provided. The Dunning-Kruger effect suggests that those with low competence in a subject tend to overestimate their knowledge and abilities, often due to their lack of awareness of what they do not know. The overconfidence serves as a protective barrier preventing the individual from acknowledging their intellectual shortcomings. At the core of the response is cognitive dissonance, where the individual faced with contradictory evidence that challenges their deeply held beliefs, instead of reevaluating their position, they dismiss all opposing arguments as liberal talking points. This behavior aligns with Festinger's 1957 theory of cognitive dissonance, which explains that when individuals are confronted with information that contradicts their worldview, they experience psychological discomfort and attempt to reduce this tension by rejecting the conflicting data rather than adapting their beliefs. By claiming that only inside information could validate facts, the individual effectively moves the goalpost to a standard that is both unreasonable and unattainable, ensuring they never have to confront reality and that their argument lacks merit. Gaslighting is another tactic at play. In their instance that Biden was caught on video committing quid pro quo, the claim has been widely debunked, yet the individual continues to repeat it as though it were undeniable fact. Gaslighting is a psychological manipulation tactic where one attempts to make another person question reality, often by insisting that falsehoods are true despite clear evidence to the contrary. The repetition of debunked claims, despite overwhelming evidence disproving them, reflects an intentional or unconscious attempt to distort reality to maintain an emotional or ideological stance. The backfire effect is also evident in the response. Research has shown that when individuals with deeply held beliefs are presented with factual information that contradicts those beliefs, they do not reconsider their stance. Rather, they double down on their original position. This explains why, despite being presented with sources from investigative journalists, government reports, and financial watchdogs, the individual continued to insist that all opposing evidence was false. Their belief system is not based on a logical assessment of reality, but rather on identity reinforcement, meaning that factual contradictions are perceived as threats rather than opportunities for intellectual growth. Lastly, the sunk cost fallacy explains the individual's refusal to concede any points in the debate. This fallacy occurs when someone continues to invest time and energy into a failing belief and endeavor because they have already dedicated significant resources to it. Admitting they were wrong would require acknowledgement that they have wasted their time defending a falsehood, which their ego cannot allow. Instead, they dismiss all counterarguments outright to avoid confronting their own cognitive errors. In conclusion, the individual's response is not an example of rational debate, but a demonstration of psychological defense mechanisms designed to shield them from discomfort and preserve their ideological identity. Projection, cognitive dissonance, the Dunning-Kruger effect, gaslighting, the backfire effect, and the sunk cost fallacy all play a role in their inability to engage with factual evidence. These mechanisms serve not to uncover the truth, but to protect their fragile worldview at all costs. Understanding these psychological patterns makes it clear that attempting to debate such individuals in good faith is often futile. They are not seeking truth, but rather emotional reinforcement of what they want to believe. So that was a lot, and I understand that you had to listen for a minute to pay attention to what was going on. But it's important because we all want to help people that we know or friends of a friend or just people in general to understand what the truth is. We want to change their mind. And it seems really simple because what's happening in the world around us is that people are getting hurt. People are dying. People are losing their jobs. People are losing access to healthcare. And then, you know, us on this side of the aisle, we get upset. We're upset about that. And then we get even further upset when we see people celebrating it. And that's hard to deal with, which is why I just read everything that I read to you, because I want to try to help you right through to some of these people, or at the very least understand that it's not really possible. So you know when to you know when to take a step back, because sometimes you're going to have to take a step back. I could argue with that guy till the end of the world, and he would never agree with me. It would take something personal. So I, you know, why do I try so hard to get through? You know, some may wonder why I put so much effort into breaking through to the opposition, why I engage in so many different ways, why I sometimes push the boundaries, and why I even bother at all. The answer is simple. It matters. It does matter. We are in serious trouble, as you just heard from Trump in the White House. We're in big trouble, and we need to do something about it. And one of the things that we can do is rally people to our side. So whether people choose to see it or not, we are in huge trouble. So the stakes are high, and the consequences of unchecked ignorance, misinformation, and blind allegiance are real. And I refuse to sit and feel helpless while watching it unfold. I believe that some of these people can be reached, and I believe it's worth trying. And it's also worth taking all this information and gleaning your capacity for stepping back when it's time to step back and know who you can and can't reach. So this isn't just about winning an argument, okay? You know, it's about fighting for truth in a time where lies spread faster than facts. And if even one person starts to question that propaganda they've swallowed, even if one person begins to think critically instead of just repeating what they've been told, then the effort is worth it. Because when enough people wake up, real change becomes possible. And so I keep trying, and I'm going to keep trying. So what might break through the shield of a pigeon? Given the psychological defense mechanisms at play, cognitive dissonance, projection, the Dunning-Kruger effect, gaslighting, and motivated reasoning, breaking through this mental fortress of willful ignorance requires something more than logic or evidence. Since their beliefs are rooted in identity rather than fact, only experiences that disrupt their identity and worldview have a chance of shaking them. Here are some potential personal experiences that could penetrate that cognitive armor, right? Direct personal consequences of the politics they support. Many pigeons exist in a bubble where they do not personally feel the effects of the policies they advocate. But when those policies start impacting them directly, their cognitive dissonance can become unbearable. So here's some examples. Economic policies leading to job loss. Supporters of aggressive government downsizing and anti-union rhetoric might face unexpected unemployment due to the implementation of these policies. And we've seen this already. We've seen people on social media go, President Trump, I voted for you. I support you. And you made a mistake. You made a mistake. You cut my job. You cut my job. How could you do that? I'm still supporting you because I know that you're going to fix this. But he's not. He's not going to fix it because he does not care about you. He never cared about you. This is about him stealing money. You will see the largest transfer of wealth ever in the history of ever while he's president if we don't get him out. So, you know, the Trump administration's recent directive for federal agencies to identify potential layoffs of hundreds of thousands of workers has raised concerns about the future of essential services, job security, you know, not to mention what's going to happen to our country when all these people that did jobs that were really important, like monitor our world health system, you know, people are going to get sick. So people are going to get sick because the systems that we have in place to control outbreaks is not there. This has happened before, and 1.5 million people died. And there's lots more people that have permanent issues. So maybe they'll have a denial of healthcare. So individuals who previously believed that government assistance is only sought out by the lazy might find themselves in need due to unforeseen circumstances like being laid off or fired. Or maybe there's some sort of health crisis, and now they're facing barriers to accessing unemployment benefits or health care, and that can challenge their assumptions about social safety nets and then the realities of economic vulnerability. So people that have really bad shit happen to them because of really bad policy, because of somebody they voted for, might shake these people loose, and this is happening. It's unfortunate that it has to happen this way. Encountering systemic injustice, legal repercussions of policy changes. So these are things that work, and this is why it works. Pigeons often support policies that hurt others, but assume they will be spared. Just like I said about that guy on social media, right? When they experience firsthand suffering, they are forced to either accept reality or double down on hypocrisy. So, you know, that shield could be broken then, because they're actually experiencing what we're telling them people are going to experience. They don't care about other people experiencing them, but they don't want to. So when that reality hits them, that could break through, and that's a good time to go, "I told you so." But, you know, depending on who it is, maybe you want to do it in a nice way. So betrayal by their own political or ideological leaders. Pigeons often idolize political figures, viewing them as infallible. When their hero inevitably betrays them or contradicts their core beliefs, some may experience a crisis of faith. And I think that's happening now too, because of how he behaved in the Oval Office. That was a disgrace. That was a disgrace. It was embarrassing. That is not how anybody that is president of the United States should behave. You know, if you want to go out and get a copy of The Art of the Deal, Trump did not write it. It was written by a ghostwriter. And the guy that wrote it said Trump is an idiot and he couldn't make a deal to save his life. So he's not a deal maker. He's a bully and he's an idiot. So, you know, he's filed bankruptcy 7 times. He's a criminal. I don't understand why anybody's following him. So, you know, so if this guy changes his mind and goes back and forth and does what's best for him instead of what's best for people, you know, why that works is when the cognitive dissonance between their faith in a leader and that leader's actions become too great, they may begin to question other aspects of their belief system. They're like, well, if this is not true, then maybe some other things are true. What I believe to be true about Trump is, it seems like maybe that this is, you know, one that might be hard to believe because, you know, Trump's been adjudicated for sexual assault and the judge said, yes, this is rape, even though that's not what he was adjudicated for. And 40 other women have accused him of similar things. Teenage girls have said, yes, he barged into my room and caught me naked. And he would do it all the time. He admitted to it. He said that he could grab women by the P word because he could just do it whenever he wanted because he was a star. All these things that he's already done that you can look up and hear him say out of his mouth that he's done, and people still support him. But so it might be, but when it hurts them, when it goes against their core beliefs, and that's sad because then you have to think about maybe their core beliefs isn't respecting women. That's a really sad thought to think about, is that their core beliefs aren't respecting women, that it's okay to talk about women and treat women like that. So an empathy shattering personal connection, one of the strongest ways to break through bigotry and conspiracy thinking and misinformation is a deeply personal connection with someone affected by the issues they mock or ignore. A close family member coming out as an LGBTQ+, despite years of a pigeon opposing equal rights, that might change some things for them. A loved one being denied life-saving medical care due to the healthcare system they once defended. A friend being deported or racially profiled, forcing them to see firsthand that the injustice exists beyond their imagined bad people versus good people worldview. And why this works is pigeons thrive in abstraction. They dehumanize others by keeping them distance. Personal emotional experiences force them to humanize the people they once dismissed. That is one of the things that I continue to try to do. I try to continue to explain that, you know, especially when it comes to immigrants in our country, that they are people and that we're all immigrants in this country and that we rely on these immigrants for our survival. So I try to, you know, not only talk about their economic viability, which is silly, but I have to do that because that's all anybody cares about. But it's not funny to get sent to a country you've never been to. It's not funny to separate a family. And when you celebrate that and laugh at that, that's kind of messed up. So maybe there's somebody in their life that they didn't think would be, you know, subjected to something like that, because to be honest with you, they are going after everybody. It doesn't matter if they're legal or not. If you're brown, you're in trouble. And I know Kash Patel is brown, but he's not part of that. He's not part of that group that they want to get after. He's not. So with the taking down of DEI, you know, it's an insane thing as a white person, as a white Republican, as a white MAGA person. It is insane to think that every single white person, every single woman or person of color isn't qualified to do their job. Do you understand how sexist and racist that is? To assume that if they're a woman, automatically assume that if they're a woman or a person of color, that they're not qualified to do their job. That's so, such a simple, stupid thing to think. I can't believe that I'm even have to talk about it. And if you look at what the Trump administration is doing, is he's firing women and people of color and saying they're all DEI. Like they haven't been doing their job this entire time and doing it well. And that's insane. The other thing, and I've tried a little bit of this, is being publicly embarrassed for their ignorance. Pigeons often have to have a false sense of superiority, believing that they are the smartest people in the room despite lacking critical thinking skills. When they are publicly humiliated or exposed for their ignorance, it can sometimes trigger reflection. And I've kind of done that to some people lately. But it's for good reason. They're putting people in danger. So when they're putting people in danger, I feel like it's justified because I'm trying to stop this. And this is the only power that I have, is to talk into this microphone and to write on the internet. So that's what I do. So being fact-checked and proven wrong in front of people they respect, being mocked or ridiculed for repeating misinformation, realizing they don't understand basic political or historical facts while arguing in public, and why this works is they are not interested in truth, but in appearing dominant. When their ego is so damaged, they may feel pressure to actually learn so they don't get humiliated again. You know, that's kind of one of my things too, actually. I'm always questioning myself, am I right? Am I wrong? Am I wrong? Am I wrong is my biggest question. Am I wrong or am I right? I have to know. So I have to do a whole bunch of research so I don't sound like an idiot in front of people, because that is embarrassing. It's embarrassing to stand up in front of some people, even if you're around people you know and you say something that's not quite right. And they're going, well, no, it's because of this. And then you're like, oh, and then you kind of feel like a child for a moment. You feel a little smaller than you did before, because you didn't know something somebody else does. And I purposely put myself in those situations all the time. I surround myself with people that are smarter than I am so I can learn. I want to learn. I don't want to be, you know, one of the dumbest people in the room. I want to be one of the smartest people in the room. And how you do that is surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. Losing a sense of belonging within their own group is another way that, you know, they don't necessarily believe in the things that they say as much as they are performing loyalties to the group that they're in. So if that group turns on them, you know, that could get them to break down their shield. Witnessing the lies of their media ecosystem in real time. Many pigeons exist in a carefully curated media bubble where misinformation is their reality. Occasionally, real world events contradict their media narrative so blatantly that they can't ignore it. Fox News viewer watching the network settle a lawsuit for lying about election fraud. A MAGA supporter realizing that the people who told them COVID is a hoax were all vaccinated. A right-wing conspiracy theorist realizing their movement is just a money-making scam. And that's all this is. Elon Musk is dismantling organizations that get in the way of him making money. Go look it up. Don't believe me? I don't want to list it all out for here because that's not what this is about today. So go look it up yourself. Elon Musk is dismantling organizations that are standing in the way of him doing what he wants to do and making money. That's all this is about. And that's all it's about for Trump. He's selling shoes, Bibles, and crypto. And he's the president of the United States. And he hasn't stopped, and he's still pushing it. He just made a post today about crypto. It's all about making money and him staying out of jail. So experiencing compassion instead of conflict. Some pigeons, they thrive off hostility and see liberals or intellectuals as their enemy. But kindness, patience, and genuine dialogue, when done correctly, can sometimes pierce their armor. And I've tried this. I've tried this a lot. It doesn't work very often. You have to find the right person. So, a progressive, calmly listening to them, then dismantling their argument with grace instead of aggression, trying to, humanize the people that they're hurting and show them that this is wrong and it works because, pigeons are conditioned to believe in false us versus them war. When they realize the enemy is not their enemy, they may start questioning their allegiances. So not all these people are capable of growth. Some will double down no matter what. However, history has shown that people can and do break out of extreme mindsets, usually due to one of the experiences above. Well, in this case, that I just said. A pigeon won't change because of a debate or an argument. They will change when their personal experience forces them to confront their own cognitive dissonance. Some never will. But for those who do, reality has a way of breaking through. And we just have to be paying attention. We have to be there. And we have to nurture that. We can try kindness. It's a good one. Humanize people. That's the best one to try. You should always try that one first. But this is hard. We're in a hard time. And it's going to take a lot of work. So hopefully I've helped you navigate this. Maybe you can glean ways to confront people in your life that don't realize how much harm they're doing to our country and to the world, to the people that we care about the most. So this has been a very unique episode of What's Going On in the World. And my name is Tommy J. Houseman. Bye-bye.